This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Are gangs behind an increase in violence in Guilford County? Greensboro had a record high number of homicides in 2017. Just over a quarter of those killings were related to gang violence. In High Point, violent deaths nearly tripled in 2017. The police chief there released a statement earlier this month connecting recent shootings and violence to known gangs in the area. Danielle Battaglia recently investigated the rise of violence in Guilford County. She's the crime and courts reporter at the Greensboro News and Record, and she joins us now from our Greensboro studios. Welcome back, Danielle.
Thank you for having me.
Talk about why you even started digging into the issue of gangs in Guilford County.
In 2017, I had noticed a spike in homicides, and the more I started investigating the homicides, I started hearing rumors about gangs being involved, and there were Facebook posts about gangs being involved, and so it started piquing my interest. I started asking questions and not really getting feedback on what was going on, but in May of this year, we had a shooting outside of the Guilford County Courthouse in Greensboro. And members of both High Point and Greensboro's gangs were present, which kind of got the police chief talking a little bit more about the gangs being here and present in Guilford County.
And we just talked about the how much violence is increasing in Greensboro and High Point. And when did authorities start connecting this with gang activity?
I am not exactly sure on the date. I know I started hearing whispers from authorities in 2017, although that's about the same time I took over covering crime, too. So it could have been because of that. I've covered courts for several years now and had heard about it on and off through court cases.
Gangs are certainly nothing new to places like Greensboro and cities all over the country. Has anybody offered suggestions, ideas about why a spike in violence now, more gang activity, simply more violence among gangs? What's going on, do you know?
I'm not sure. I think there's been an increase in activity between High Point's gangs and Greensboro's gangs. I think there's just been a lot more violence, period, and with violence comes gang activity.
As part of your reporting, you talked with two people who are currently involved in gang life. What were they telling you?
They were actually, their conversation with me was interesting. To them, they joined gangs to be part of a family and to find a connection. They saw it as a type of fraternity and less as the violent criminal organizations that I think the general public would view them as. And so to them, it was just a regular part of their life that had a mix of violence in it, and that was the part that they hated about being members, was having to, you know, commit violent crimes or doing anything dangerous to stay a member or not get in trouble with their gang leadership.
Obviously, there has been an increase in violence. Police are attributing some of it to gang activity. Was there any sense on their part that things are getting more violent?
They've said they've seen an increase over the last 3 years of gang violence. And then, I mean, the numbers speak for themselves in Greensboro. We had 42 homicides last year, which was the highest ever. Right now we're six below last year. We've got 24 that have happened here in Greensboro.
You talked about in your pieces the use of social media in reporting on gangs and its impact. Talk more about that.
Social media seems to have taken some pieces of, like, common things that you see in gangs away, so they're not showing their colors as much, so, like, Bloods aren't wearing red, Crips aren't wearing blue. You see different patterns of how they're typing, so there's, like, certain letters they won't use. So if you're a Crip, you won't use the letter B. If you're a Blood, you won't use the C. And then I've also seen, I had a member of the community point out to me that gang members were going onto Facebook and other social media sites saying, like, if this guy gets out of the hospital, put a hit out on his life, we'll pay you $1,000, which I've only seen one post like that, but it was immediately taken off social media following that.
How are authorities tracking gangs? Is there any more, are they more sophisticated these days than they had been?
Greensboro Police is using GangNet, which is a statewide computer program that allows them to track gang members, the vehicles they drive, I think the guns they use, any distinguishing features, so like tattoos, scars, things like that. High Point doesn't have the manpower to do that, so they've got their own system on their computers that are allowing them to do something very similar, but not as extensive as using GangNet.
Joining our conversation now is a scholar who has studied gangs for decades. Carl Taylor is a professor of sociology at Michigan State University. Carl Taylor, welcome to the State of Things.
Thank you for having me.
You have done research for a long time on this, and you put gangs into categories. You have various ways of sort of stratifying gangs. Tell us about that.
Well, when we began back in the late 80s, early 90s, we put together a typology because of the variation and the types of gangs and behavior that we were seeing. So, for example, I was telling your producer yesterday, I started out looking at kids who I felt were surviving by any means. That was pretty hard. And so I said that they were scavengers, which ended up being a big mistake because the media ran with it in a very sensational way. And then even colleagues and other social scientists, people in law enforcement took scavenger as a negative, and it wasn't a negative. But so they started talking about them in very negative ways and inhumane. So we changed that from scavenger to tyro, which means infant stage. They come out, they're poly drug users. They're the kids who are not in school, haven't been in school. They're coming out of distressed communities, distressed homes. So we were, that part was a little bit simple in understanding. And then we went on to other types of gangs. So I would caution everyone that that went back quite a few years, and one size doesn't fit all.
Corporate gang was another kind of general category. Talk about how that's different from this Tyro League. This is
corporate gang is an indication that things are very serious. They're well organized. They have rules. Their memberships are usually large. They have stern leadership. Many times it's integrated with adults at the helm. They're using youngsters, teenagers, juveniles, because of the inability for law enforcement in particular. At that time, our juvenile codes weren't designed for a 14-year-old drug dealer. The juvenile codes were more designed for stealing hubcaps of West Side Story.
Right. And you, I think the Chambers brothers became the sort of poster children for the kind of corporate gang, this well-organized a machine that you're talking about.
Well, corporate gang, yes and no. Actually, it was Young Boys Incorporated was the first one that was really the Rolls Royce of gangs. The Chamber Brothers came afterwards, and they migrated out of the South, out of Little Rock, Arkansas. And President Clinton, in his bid for the presidency in the beginning, talked about kids leaving Marianna, Arkansas, and coming to Detroit, Michigan, where I was. And so the Chambers were a strong organization, but nothing like Young Boys Incorporated. We had never seen anything like Young Boys Incorporated. They were 300 strong. They had an enforcement arm. They were well-trained, an incredible group of deviant young men.
Talk about the training and the rules and the kind of money that's involved and the integration that's involved in this kind of an operation.
Well, the monies, and we're talking millions of dollars, and a lot of times there are people who poo-poo that. But I find that amazing that you're saying one group of kids can, it's okay for them to be drug addicts and so forth, but that they don't have the brain power. They certainly do. And then also I would include young females involved in this also, things that we hadn't seen in the past. But corporate gangs have strict rules, like you don't use what you sell. If they found that out, it could bring deadly consequences from physical beatings or even you'd be taken someplace and murdered. They certainly had always usually have older men and women involved, adults giving them charge and direction. But you also had a divide where we'd had middle-class kids and upper-middle-class kids in corporate gangs that we hadn't seen in other gangs. Usually the gangs have, as I said earlier, come from distressed communities with distressed kids. But middle-class, working-class kids who were had mothers and fathers who were working, which oppose everything that we have theoretically on the books, they came along because of the money. The money capitalism is amazing.
Well, this does then create, it seems to me, a distinction between that kind of a gang just in terms of why you want to be a member. I mean, you heard Danielle talk about in her reporting, so many people in distressed neighborhoods join because they need to belong. They want a sense of identity. You know, and the violence and the money, that may be secondary to all of this. But it strikes me that once you get to, you're talking about organized crime. I guess you can call it a gang. We call them gangsters, but it's a different level. My question here is, does it evolve? Is there a kind of evolution from one to the other, or are they two separate genealogies?
They belong to the same typology, but they are separate. You're correct. I thought her reporting was excellent when she talked about, and that is correct, but I think that we should step back and look at ourselves as a nation. A lot of what they're showing is, I think, normal for Americans. It's just where they are and their limitations and what they have, what they're exposed to. Everybody needs to belong, and belonging to a group is important. Having a good family, that is absolutely correct. The difference is the behavior. Now, that's what I'm saying. Gangs, I don't get excited anymore about gangs. I make a distinction between gangs and gangsters. But her reporting was right on spot, in my opinion. That's what I've been hearing, that I belong to this gang because a lot of kids are homeless. A lot of kids have dysfunctional homes and have parents. I had yesterday, ironically, when filming a documentary, I had a young woman who's now a mother with a 21-year-old daughter. But when I met her years ago, she was a 14-year-old gang member and became a leader, and she doesn't use drugs, she doesn't drink, and she's very violent when confronted the wrong way. She used to hang in the street. She had a reputation. And yet yesterday, when I interviewed her, she's still scary to me in a sense, but she's a mother working for, I won't say where she works, but she has a very legitimate job, has went to get her GED that we helped her with. We gave her a lot of guidance as a project, and she has come back, and I'm not saying she's squeaky clean, but she stands, and her daughter was, I was so impressed yesterday, she brought her daughter with her to the taping of the show.
Well, you're talking about doing a documentary today. You began your research decades ago, early, late 80s, right? Mm-hmm. How have things changed?
Definitely they have changed, and we kept up with that change. We concluded things in that study, but the study is ongoing. That's one of the reasons that's longitudinal. But that's another reason that I speak with a very strong voice. I'm saying to America, you don't get it. And that includes many. And I don't want to denigrate anyone, but it's not all shoot 'em up, bang, bang. A lot of this is mental health. A lot of this is drug addiction. It's a very complex problem that we're looking
at. Well, what would you tell law enforcement? I mean, do you think law enforcement is approaching this in the right way in general? Obviously, it varies from one department to another, but in general, has law enforcement got the right idea?
Wow, Frank, that's a really tough question. Put me on the spot with all the law enforcement in the United States. I think it's mixed. I have some in law enforcement that I work with that I've known, some were my law enforcement consultants. A lot of these guys understand very well, and they go out and do training of other departments and individuals. It depends on the leadership. That's the leadership of the department. Some people and some law enforcement think that they're just a bunch of punks. So they take that approach. I don't think that approach has been successful. We are seeing kids armed like never before. Where are the guns coming from? The types of guns that we're seeing. But more important, it's the mental state, and that's what I talk about. And then there I go after community organizations, including the religious community and others. There's a great disconnect from young people. And so I had a kid tell me recently, well, I was asked him, why are you with this crew? And his response was, may as well be with this crew. They provide protection. That's more than you guys are giving me. By that, he meant society. And in his neighborhood, he's correct. We have seen police departments reduced in size in cities like Detroit. We also have seen funds reduced to train police. And you look at who you're hiring and how they're trained, in fairness. Some of the gangs are so deadly that I would put them on a level like with people become angry when I say this, but they're just like terrorists. And then other ones don't deserve to be considered criminal, in my opinion. They're misguided young people. And there are a lot of citizens that don't want to hear that. They think all gangs are bad, and you should destroy them and put them in prison forever. And now we have a society that's looking at what the cost of locking people up is, and yet they still go ahead. And then we have to look at the moral picture in this nation, where you have a lot of adults, business people, politicians, who are performing criminal acts themselves, and they talk out both sides of their mouth. And that trickles down to gang members, a street culture.
Well, if you're from the law enforcement, I want to take this from two levels. I want to talk about policy toward the end of this conversation. But if you're at the police level, does it help to approach this as a gang problem? Do you need a gang unit to approach gangs as gangs? Or, I mean, these are crimes. You know, homicide is a crime. Theft is a crime. Drug sales are crimes. You can just arrest people. Does it matter that they're in gangs? Does your law enforcement change if you're a member of a gang?
Good question. Tough one. You're absolutely right. Some cities have gang squads. And it depends on, again, how you go about executing your business. If the gang squad is there to fight the gang from the standpoint on the street and with the criminal aspect of, as you say, serious issues such as homicide, rape, and those types of things, then having a tough gang squad is good. But if you're talking about the most effective means, I'm saying after I've watched for over 3 decades, you want to talk about prevention. So you go back and look at the home, and you look at the neighborhoods, and you look at employment. And those things sound corny to a lot of people or a waste of time. But I think you have to apply those things with accuracy. You can't just throw education. You have to have the right types of teachers. I have some wonderful educators working with my project, and I'm not bragging, but we've been very successful individually with young men and young women in steering them back to something. But if you educate folks, you got to put them to work. And so in post-industrial America and in Detroit, those jobs are never coming back again. And with technology being what it is, and I thought your comments regarding the social media were interesting, because we see the foolishness of kids who are ignorant. And I relate that to the decline in public education. They're just ignorant. They can't read, but they know how to get on that technology. The fact that they're placing their homicides and their criminal activity on the internet is just asinine, but they don't think so. So, and there's also mental health, and we treat mental health funny in this nation. So,
well,
there's a lot of things going on.
You end up in prison rather than getting the help you need.
That's another thing too. Prison is not prison.
Danielle, I want to ask Danielle Battaglia another question, though, because you've done your reporting in Greensboro, and I want to know what alternatives there are being provided and, you know, sort of what steps the people in Greensboro and Guilford County are taking now that they've recognized this to counter this.
I think there's a couple different approaches. I know there's one man that I interviewed in this piece named Kenny Slade, who has fixed up one of our parks, Hampton Park here in Greensboro, to basically be a place that kids can come and play basketball and give them that family that they're searching for in the gangs. And so he's been able to steer some of them away from gangs. He's been able to mentor some who are. There's other organizations. Like, we've got a group here right now that's trying to get funding for a program called Cure Violence, where they basically train civilians to go out and talk with the families that are victims of homicides and talk to them about diffusing the situation, not finding retribution in what happened. So there's some approaches going on. I think it's still something that Greensboro Police is looking into, High Point Police is looking into, but some of the community members are stepping up to find other ways to do it themselves.
I want to thank both of you for being on the program. Danielle Battaglia is a crime and courts reporter of the Greensboro News and Record. She joined us from our studios in Greensboro. Carl Taylor is a professor of sociology at Michigan State University. Carl, Danielle, thank you both.
Thank you.
Just ahead, comedian Martha Kelly talks about going back home and then again and again and finally ending up in Austin. Martha Kelly's next. Stay tuned.